This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, season 4, episode 17. This is the 101 episode of our show. Last week I said 17, but I meant 16. So it's like, is it a zero-based counting that we do here on me? I can't remember. Which would make, yes, last episode 6, no, it would make it 15, wouldn't it?
Well, I thought I was particularly touched that you don't actually count the early episodes, because I was not on the first couple, so...
Oh, that's true.
I feel like...
So you know, welcome to episode 14, folks. No, it's really 17. Is it 17? Wait, I'm confused now. Yes, it's 17. Looking at my notes.
Those early pilots where Spock smiles and stuff, right? That's how we're going with it.
Yes, true. Sorry. Or yeah, and he kind of chuckles under his breath. Yes. This is, by the way, is fact check. Oh wait, I should start at the top and say, hey, my name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kula in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there.
As in Mississauga, Ontario.
I'm in here.
I misspake. All right. Yes, that's your little Easter egg for the show. And I'm also joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Going good. Yeah, so like I said, this is episode 17, not 6. 17 wasn't last week. That was not really last. It was last week, but it wasn't 17. This is 17. Anywho, yes, at 17 I learned the truth. Yes, John Bishop is from Doctor Who. And he plays Dan on Doctor Who this season. Where I knew him from. He was actually a stand-up comedian in the UK. So that's, you may have seen him on the Facebook or whatever, telling jokes and that kind of stuff. And he's been in a few shows and stuff like that before. But yeah, that's where his thing started. And also, he started as a stand-up comedian quite late in life, like 35, I think, or something like that. And last week I was talking about, in the after show, I was talking about a progressive rock band, Triumvirate. If that's how you say it, I don't know, but that's how I always said it. And they, in fact, are a German progressive rock band. German. Alrighty, and we'll move on to the headlines, and Jonathan's up first.
Yeah, so The Eternals is the latest opus from Marvel, and we talked last episode about how it was... not getting the immediate love. It was a low ranked on Rotten Tomatoes. It is fair to point out that it is doing quite well. It has made, according to this article, it's made $71 million in North America since its debut, and done quite well, although it continues to struggle in the Rotten Tomatoes area. Apparently it is 47% is where it's currently sitting.
And that's on the fan side or the credit side?
That's on the critics side.
Okay.
And yeah, apparently it's still struggling as far as its reviews. I will give a little tease that we can talk about it now, or we can talk about it later in this episode. What do you think, Tim? Do you want to get
into
it?
We'll talk about it later in the episode, but we can do the teaser now.
Okay, well, we'll tease you now and say that Tim and I went, along with our number one fan, to go see The Eternals last night in our time, and we will have a little discussion about it. Jaime hasn't had a chance to go see it yet, so we're going to keep things very high level, and we're not going to spoil anything. We will just give our impressions. So stick around. We're going to talk about Eternals right after we talk about Star Trek Prodigy.
I do have a question, though.
Yes.
About Eternals. So we went, like, it opened last Friday, right?
Yes.
And we went to the Winston Churchill Cineplex Oakville Theaters.
Yes.
And we used to know it as the Winston Churchill AMC, which is why we call it that still to this day.
Yeah, yes.
But were you not surprised to find that it was relatively empty for a Wednesday night after it had only opened within less than a week?
Yeah, I'm still having a tough time gauging that, because it is, you're right, it was certainly quiet. I think we were three out of probably 15 people in a 420 plus seat IMAX theater. This is the same one that you and Xavier and I had to ourselves to go see a movie not that long ago. I'm really having a tough time gauging whether or not this is just people are slow to return to movies because of the pandemic, or if this is just people are not enthused by this particular movie. So I don't necessarily want to judge it based on that. But you're right. I think when I was thinking, I'd like to see Eternals in the theater, I was thinking, well, we'll probably have to wait a few weeks for things to die down. You and I, because we of the circumstances of our work, had the Thursday off to observe Remembrance Day here in Canada, and we thought, okay, well then let's take advantage of that, and we can actually go sneak in a late show the night before. And yeah, it was pretty sparse, but then the whole theater was pretty sparse. Like, there wasn't just Eternals when we got there, and Xavier and I got there at 20 minutes before showtime, the entire facility was extremely quiet. So again, I don't know if that's just things are really quiet on a Wednesday, irrespective of what movie's playing. Although I did actually ask, coincidentally, I asked the young man behind the concessions counter. I happened to just be making chit chat, and I said, hey, out of curiosity, things are pretty quiet here right now. Do you consider this job to be, pretty laid back? And he said, usually, especially when there's a new, Marvel movie out, he said, it can be quite busy, and you're running pretty fast to try and keep up with the demand. And I said, and then there's nights like tonight. And he said, yeah, tonight is, is dead as a doornail. And this happened to be 4 days, 5 days after a Marvel movie had come out. So I guess you can gauge that as you will, but to me, it sounds like this was not a hot property.
Well, true. But also on the Wednesday night perspective, I mean, I used to work in retail and hospitality services and stuff like that. And you could usually you brought your staff in and you made as, popcorn and that kind of stuff based on the perceived demand that was going to be happening. And as you may hear again in the show, I showed up late because circumstances. So I was probably thank goodness there's 20 minutes of previews, because I had that gave me enough time to get to the theater and then miss like maybe 5 or 10 minutes of the actual show. But when I got to the theater, the doors were locked because I guess there was like nobody at the concessions, and the staff were just milling around, but they were so far back they couldn't hear me banging on the door. But that, to me, as a former manager, would say, we locked the doors because they're not expecting anybody else to come. I mean, mind you, it was the last show of the evening kind of thing. But I mean, the theater was not super, not when we came out of the movie, it wasn't like not crowded, like, because there are other shows. I mean, there's the James Bond movies playing there, as well as, other things that are some of the horror stuff would probably still be there from like the Halloween and stuff like that they had out, right?
Well, it is funny. It is a strange week too. I mean, you make a good point. So Dune, which we saw.
Dune, right. That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Dune had been pushed out of the IMAX theater to the largest AVX theater at this particular theater. Xavier and I, while we were sort of milling about, were checking out some of the other things that were playing in there, and they were playing a few Bollywood movies because of Diwali happening right now. So, there is the two other large theaters near the center of the facility were playing playing Bollywood movies. So I don't know what the demand was for other movies. So again, it could just be they were expecting, Eternals would sort of be the dominant thing, and they were sort of clearing a path or what. So it's hard to say what decisions were made as far as what's playing and where and for how long.
We do have a friend actually who works in that industry. We probably could send a question his way.
That's true. We do actually. We do have a friend of the show. We might be able to tap into on that one.
I don't know if he's a friend of the show, but
I'm sure he listens religiously. Could be. Really? I don't know.
I don't think he even knows we have a podcast.
All right. Well, that's probably fair. Maybe he'd like it. We talked about.
I'm
movies.
Talking about Christopher. I don't know who you're talking
about. I am too.
About.
So I was going to say, okay, he likes movies. Maybe he'd be into it.
True. All right. Anyway, let's move on to the next story, and it's Jaime's turn.
Yeah. So apparently, there's this thing called IMAX Enhanced that's coming to Disney Plus, and it's sort of making its debut with Shang-Chi, which is going to be available on Friday, November 12th on Disney Plus. But apparently there's 13 total movies that are getting this IMAX enhanced. So it's, I guess these films were shot in at least partially in a different aspect ratio. It looks like that expanded aspect ratio is a 1.9:1 ratio instead of the 16:9 that's normally there. So what this practically means is that you'll have sort of a bigger view and less letterboxing on at least part of the scenes. So I'm kind of interested to see what this ends up looking like, because the different IMAX aspect ratio for the Snyder cut of Justice League was interesting. So if you want the full list here, very quickly, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther, Black Widow, Captain America Civil War, Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, both 1 and 2, Shang-Chi, and Thor Ragnarok.
Hmm. All of those were in IMAX?
I guess they shot some scenes. Does this say exactly? Like, there's some movies where, like, 20 minutes is in IMAX. You know, if you've seen those kind of things, it's... Hmm. It's one of those things where I don't understand enough of the industry. I was like, why did you just shoot it all in IMAX instead of cheaping out for the 20 minutes that you want to show the pew, pew, pew. I mean, just, you know, let me see the whole thing, but there must be really good reasons. Otherwise they wouldn't make this as complicated.
Is IMAX still shot on film though? That's the thing though. Like, cause it used to be the film, the 70 millimeter film going through a projector camera sideways, right? Like they rotate the image on the film. I wonder if it must be digital now, I would think, right? But what's interesting though is I just noticed today when I was watching Prodigy on my TV that there were significant black boxes on the top and bottom of the screen, which to make it the more, 16:9 aspect ratio, right? So, mm-hmm. So it seemed like, and based on the image they have here with Black Widow showing the blue line, where the extra, you can see more of her hair and you can see a little bit of debris behind her basically because you're getting a lot taller image, right? And that would sort of fill out that screen, right? It's not like the old television aspect ratio, but it is more, significantly more. I guess it fills the screen more. And we also noticed, I think Xavier and I both commented on a few scenes in the very beginning of Dune, you could see that there was a significant black bar at the bottom of the projected image. And then when an IMAX scene came on, the view extended, right? So that must be, because I know that with Dark Knight and stuff like that, there were only like a few scenes that were shot on IMAX, right? You know, that was one of the earlier action adventure movies that was done on IMAX.
Yeah. One of the things that he pointed out to me, was that IMAX Enhanced is actually it's a brand, right? IMAX Enhanced is a visual brand, but it's also an audio brand. And he was lamenting when I mentioned to him, did you see that they are upgrading the aspect ratio? And he said, yeah, whoop-de-doo. When are they going to upgrade to IMAX Enhanced audio too?
Right. Yeah.
Because he's very much into, audio quality. And, just looking through this piece, it doesn't say anything at all about any of the IMAX enhanced audio. Now, the audio mix, from my perspective, and I think he would disagree, is that is pretty good, depending on obviously your piece of equipment you're listening on. They do have Dolby Vision and the Dolby Sound and stuff like that.
Atmos.
Yeah. So again, some TVs are obviously made for that. Unfortunately, we have a Samsung television set, and those do not use the
you Dolby need a Vision. HomePod.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, it remains to be seen sort of what will happen as far as audio quality going forward on these things too.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that my friend that I was talking about, with the who went and saw Eternals, went to the Ontario Place Cinesphere, and he said the one thing he regretted about it was packed. He said, first of all, basically the one thing he regretted was the sound just isn't quite as up to snuff. I mean, it's one of the original IMAX theaters, and I don't know that they've necessarily updated the sound, but I mean, IMAX used to be, like, one of the things that you used to go to IMAX for was to get that sort of surround sound, because yeah. They had speakers all the way around your left and right, as well as up and down. And so, you know, if a bullet went off in the top right-hand corner, you would hear the sound in the top right-hand corner, you know, kind of thing. So they could very, very easily place sounds within a sort of, you know, 360 sphere, or was it 360? It's much more than that. But, you know, within a sort of space around you, right, sort of thing. Sort of the concept of surround sound, that kind of stuff. Interesting. Which reminds me, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever heard about this, but when Earthquake, the movie, came out with, yes, that guy, O.J. Simpson, when it came out, they had these big, giant subwoofers installed in all the theaters, right? So when the earthquake happened, the entire theater would rumble with this giant sound that, you know, and it would shake the theater, and you couldn't hear the dialogue. It was like, but it was like, you know, the audio equivalent of Smell-O-Vision, where they would spray stuff at you, you know. But yeah, no, it was like this, just sort of this thing they had, this goofy, you know, big giant speakers in the front of the theater.
Yeah, I think they need to bring movies like that, that sort of whole disaster genre back with those 40X theaters. You can smell the smoke, the thing shakes.
They do that now? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun to get in one of those things? It'd be like you'd be like shaking baby syndrome at the end of an episode of the earthquake disaster movie.
Yeah, my friend Ken and I, when we used to go to those, you know, the ones that had those D box seats with that shake and stuff, we would all sit in the row in front or behind them, because you would get the same effect.
Yeah, your seat's moving, it's fine, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not like being rocked around, like, you know, you have to have a seatbelt on to stay in the seat kind of deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, things we do for movies, for effects. I guess I need to work on that for the Oculus too, right? You have somebody punch you.
They send a big guy over to just punch you in the ribs every time something happens.
Yeah.
Boy, I really thought I would enjoy Rocky and Oculus, but it's been terrible.
Yeah. Anyway. And next we have some Star Wars news.
Nothing but Star Wars. Okay. So the announcement came earlier this year. We were going to get a Rogue Squadron movie from Patty Jenkins. Patty Jenkins, of course, director of the last couple of Wonder Woman movies. Very talented director. This week we got news that it is going to be a little bit longer. So she was originally going to be working on this flick, and this was supposed to be the first theatrical Star Wars movie after Rise of Skywalker, and that came out in 2019. So, you know, considering they were kind of pumping out Star Wars movies on an annual basis, there was a bit of a gap, and this was going to be the next one. It was scheduled for, it was supposed to come out in 2022, and now it's scheduled for 2023 because she apparently has other commitments. So apparently she was going to do Wonder Woman after she did Rogue Squadron, but now apparently she's going to do it before. And has she was going to do a remake of the Elizabeth Taylor Cleopatra movie for Warner Brothers, and apparently that's also on the table. So yeah, we're going to have to wait a little longer before we get a Rogue Squadron movie. I don't know about you guys. I'm interested in this movie. I like the property. I've read, you know, some of the comic book versions of this, and I'm keen to see it. But I wasn't like, I can't wait. And if it gets delayed by a year, I don't know that I care, especially because Disney Plus has sort of filled that void and really well on the Star Wars front. What are you guys thinking about this delay?
Well, I mean, I totally forgot that the movie was coming out, but I mean, like, obviously you're going to do Wonder Woman before you do Rogue Squadron, really? You know, like, why not?
I mean, I'm kind of torn. Like, I don't know what your guys overall, I can't recall what we talked about Wonder Woman 1984. I thought it was fine. It wasn't like,
it was a number two. It was a sequel.
Yeah. There were some fine moments in it and, you know, all good performances and whatever, but it wasn't a great movie. It was a good movie. It was certainly, you know, grab a bag of popcorn and enjoy the movie. It wasn't like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for more.
It was Mall Rats to Clerks. Let's put it that way.
Sure. How about you, Jaime?
Yeah, I think I'm in a pretty similar spot in that I'll probably be pretty hyped to see it when it's imminent. But for the time being, if it's delayed, I think you're quite right. The Star Wars fulfillment is coming out of Disney Plus nowadays. So it's not like, you know, oh man, you know, maybe they're going to make a new series. And, you know, some 20 years later, the prequels came out.
If this news had come and they were like, oh, by the way, we're going to have to push off Mandalorian season 3 for another year, I'd be like, hey.
Yeah.
But in this case, I'm like, yeah, I'm good for now. It's fine. I got a lot of other stuff to keep me busy. And frankly, I don't need to spend another, you know, $80 at the movie theater right now.
The difference in perspective when your birth year begins with a 1 versus beginning with a 2, I think, is what's happening here for folks. We are like the wise elves in Lord of the Rings of like, we've got time. What is it, 50 years? Yeah, whatever, man. That's fine. I'll wait it out.
Yeah, it's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. Some of us don't have 50 years, though.
What? Come on.
Yes. That's negative thinking, Tim.
Yeah, really.
Well, that's true. You know, I went to a coaching thing once, and they talked about, you know, all the sort of things you could do to change your work career and your life career and your work life balance and stuff like that. And, you know, if you pick a date in the future when you think your life is going to end, you know, what's your life going to be like, you know, the year or two before? Like, you've accomplished all this stuff, you've cleared all your, you know, you got yourself all balanced and everything like that, then why are you going to die the next year? Was the sort of lesson that you took away from that. So, The life extension, they called it. But anyway, just for the sake of our fans here, I found the lyrics to Star Wars. Star Wars. We've always said nothing but Star Wars, so we were wrong. But
that's the third line.
This is credited to John Williams and Bill Murray. In the lounge.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Don't let them in.
Star Wars. If they should bar wars, please let these Star Wars stay. And hey, how about that nutty space Star Wars bar?
God.
Can you believe all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Star Wars, those near and far wars. Star Wars, whatever.
Oh, Boomer, you genius, you.
Yes, he's a wonderful singer. There you go. All right. Speaking of Bill Murray,
wow, what a great segue. So we got our final, quote-unquote, final trailer for Ghostbusters Afterlife. And a little more feel, a little more look. We get a little more, you know, that this has obviously got a pretty strong tie to this, you know.
It's starring the sexiest man of 2021.
That's right. Starring the sexiest man alive, Mr. Paul Rudd. I'd like to point out he's in his 50s, and that's a great thing. My first thought when I saw it, I genuinely thought this was, did Idris Elba die?
No way. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
I mean, come on. Listen, Paul Rudd's a good looking man, and I think he's very funny. But as long as Idris Elba's still alive, come on.
That's true. Well, I think the best tweet about that, just since we're still on the Paul Rudd story here, is that Weird Al Yankovic posted a picture of Paul Rudd in a Halloween costume as Weird Al saying, you know, congratulations on being the sexiest man alive in 2021, dressed
carrying a little mini accordion too. It's very funny.
That's true. Oh, was he? I didn't see that.
He was. So, I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at this trailer, but it did spark for me that pressing question, and I know that Jaime, this is definitely foremost on your mind, given that that I think things are still a little tighter, perhaps in the Seattle area than they are maybe here in the Greater Toronto area. Mm-hmm. Is Ghostbusters Afterlife a go to the theater movie for you guys? I am a huge Ghostbusters fan. I saw the first movie when I was 10 years old. I went for a friend's birthday party. We went and saw it, and it blew me away. I was like, this is the greatest movie. And I absolutely loved it. And of course, this was, you know, just coming off of, you know, Empire had come out the year before, and we, you know, that trilogy had sort of wrapped up, and I was just enthralled by this movie. That was great, and must have seen it dozens of times over the years. And then, you know, the sequel came along, Ghostbusters 2, really enjoyed it. They did do the television show, the Real Ghostbusters cartoon. Did enjoy that too, although I was starting to age out a little bit on that. And then, they, of course, whatever that was, four years ago, they did the all female cast version that was clearly set in that genre, but it was a different take. And I thought it was actually really quite well done. I actually enjoyed that movie, but it didn't resonate quite the same way. And so here we've got Ivan Reitman, the original director's son, coming back to as Jason doing the Ghostbusters Afterlife as this sort of tie back to the original trilogy. We know that we're going to get appearances from Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray. I assume we're also getting, I don't know. I've never even looked.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways, so my question back to you guys is this a go see it in the theater experience? Is this one you're willing to wait for, or are you interested at all?
Yeah, I think this is a go see it in theater thing. I mean, unfortunately, the go see it in the theater thing, a lot of that has to do with the crowd too, right? I mean, but, you know, I still find it a little odd to be in a room with other people that I don't know. But, you know, it's kind of, but that was sort of always the sort of thing. You go see it, hopefully in the first week when it's out, because you're in a room with people who are diehard, you know, Ghostbusters fans, right? And they're going to react to the same, you know, tie-ins that, you know, hopefully you'll react to. I mean, that's how we feel about when we go see Star Wars movies and Star Trek movies, right? It's always, you know, those kind of people.
This
particular one, I mean, I probably would have seen the all female cast one in the theaters too if time had worked out, but you know, I ended up seeing that one on rental or something, but or Netflix or whenever it came out, I guess. But yeah, I think I would go see this one in the theater.
Okay, I just looked it up, and yes, Ernie Hudson and Sigourney Weaver are theoretically supposed to be at least cameoing in this movie. Okay.
Whew. Oh, I see. But no Rick Moranis.
No, but I mean, good luck getting Rick Moranis to be in anything. How about you, Jaime? Is this a go see it? And again, particularly given your circumstances, I'm curious.
Yeah, I think this one's borderline. So maybe what I might try to do is sneak out for a midday showing, try to use Google Maps to figure out what days are the slowest days, what hours are the slowest hours, and go to like a 10 a.m. on Tuesday showing or something.
Be like, Wednesday night in Oakville sounds pretty good too.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. That might be the case to the way to do it, to just get out there. So we have Yanksgiving coming up pretty soon.
That's right.
That's kind of an awkward time because people, including the kiddos, will be out. So
when is it coming out?
The 19th, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, and Thanksgiving is what, the 18th or something?
No, it's the week after.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a good time to go, because that's kind of sort of what Jonathan and I did, was we had today, Remembrance Day, off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about sort of what's left on the slate are the movies that I'd really like to see in the theater. I feel like the window is shutting quickly on seeing the new James Bond, which stinks because I would have really liked to have seen that. And now it's already shifting into the smaller size theaters.
Oh, so it's not even in the big guys anymore.
Maybe it is at a different theater here at the theater that we often go to. It's not in the IMAX. It's not in the AVX. It's already moved off to the side theaters. So you can still go see it, but it's a different experience, obviously.
How are the numbers doing on that? I wonder.
I have not looked, but I mean, it's been out for a while already. And as you and I talked about the other day, it's already made its move to on demand rental.
Oh
too.
Yeah. No, you're right. I'm probably going to rent it and watch it on TV.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an option, and it's an option for any of these movies. I am a little disappointed because I really have enjoyed the Daniel Craig, movies in the theater. And I think I would have liked to have seen that, but I'm not sure that I'll make it for that one. But we were talking about, you know, what's still the must see this sort of holiday season. You know, I think Spider-Man No Way Home is a slam dunk. I think that one I want to see in the theater. Matrix Resurrections I think is a slam dunk. And then it was sort of like, well, what else is out there? Like, what, you know, Ghostbusters, okay, sure, you know, what else is like, you know, really on your radar that you feel like you would, you know, make that effort for?
That's coming out, or?
Yeah, that's coming out in the next, you know, the next little while.
I'll have to go to an app. Let's try Flixster.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's much. This might be it, because I was not planning to see, even prior to y'all's semi-review there, I was not planning to see Eternals in the theater. I was going to wait for Disney Plus. This one, Ghostbusters, as weird as it sounds, I think because it's not available some other way anytime soon, it kind of tips the balance a little bit, which I guess is sort of the strategy for some of the movies that are coming out that are, say, you know, exclusively in theaters.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are we not going to go see Clifford the Big Red Dog in the theater?
No, man, that's on Paramount Plus here.
Oh, is it? No.
That's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be like Paw Patrol. We're going to have it on in the background.
We 100% expect your review, Jaime. We expect you to break that down for us.
Our household want to know.
You know, Sunday chores, whatever weekend that comes out.
It comes out this weekend.
Is this weekend? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be.
Opening Friday, it says. Yeah.
Folding laundry and doing dishes.
Oh, coming soon. Is it coming soon here?
Yeah, so I just took a quick scan, and as far as major releases, and please forgive me if I'm forgetting something that you're excited about, dear listeners, but from what I see, you know, Ghostbusters is coming out on the 19th of November. There's a new Resident Evil movie. Depends on who you are, whether you like that. There are some other movies that are not sort of genre. So, you know, House of Gucci, Encanto, the new Walt Disney movie. There are a few other sort of things mixed in there that, you know, you can decide if you want to watch those. I don't think they're really for this audience. West Side Story remake is coming out. Mm-hmm. Again, I can live without seeing that in the theater personally. And then, Spider-Man is coming out on December 17th. And then on the 22nd of December, we're going to get The Matrix Resurrections.
Versus The Kingsman.
The Kingsman is also coming out. Again, I have not seen the Kingsman movies, so it doesn't really do anything for me.
It's like James Bond meets Men in Black, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, cool. I'll watch it eventually when I watch the other ones on insert streaming service here. So really, it's just a matter of whether James Bond is still on the menu. But beyond that, Matrix, Ghostbusters, and Spider-Man are the three big tent poles to come. Are they all slam dunks? Are they all musts? I mean, it's funny, you mentioned it, Jaime, that Eternals was never really on your radar to see. When was the last time there was a Marvel movie released in the theater where you were like, meh, pandemic notwithstanding?
Yeah. When you remove the pandemic from the equation, I think it's difficult to think about. I think maybe Thor: The Dark World. Maybe it was one that I was like, I can wait for that one. But I don't know if I'm misremembering that and just sort of adding in the narrative in my own head, or if it was actually the way I thought about it.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's coming up in a real brief, I think, just for our point of view. So you mentioned all the way up to Spider-Man, Matrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next up, I think, would be the Morbius one we talked about last week. I don't know if I would want to see that in the theater. Uncharted. The Batman. Ooh, there's another Downton Abbey movie coming, and Sonic 2.
And Doctor Strange is coming, but that's not until spring.
Yeah, that's May 6th. May 6th. Mm-hmm. There's a new Jurassic World coming. Lightyear is coming on the 17th of June, so we're way into June.
Top Gun Maverick, anyone?
I think I missed that one. I don't know how I skipped over that one.
Yeah, and Mission Impossible 7 is coming, too.
There's a new Thor coming. There's a Black Adam coming, which... Mm-hmm. There's a new Flash. There's a new the Black Panther is November. Avatar 2, which is a pass.
you say that, but I bet you by the time it comes around, we might give it some serious thought, because those movies are, say what you will, they are a visual delight. That as a movie going experience, seeing Avatar in 3D in the theater, it was an incredible technological achievement. Cameron, right. Whether or not you like his storytelling or his characters or whatever, he makes really interesting films.
Yeah. The Marvels is next in, this is February 2023, and then Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is 2023 as well, May, and then Quantumania?
Ant-Man and the Wasp, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think from here on out, Eternals was always the question mark for me. Will I make the effort for Eternals? And again, it was always predicated on, well, what will the environment be at the time? Everything else that's coming out is a sequel or is very connected to the established MCU. You know, we're going to get Spider-Man. We're going to get Doctor Strange. We're going to get all these, you know, the new Thor movie. They're all picking up threads that we're comfortable with. For me, again, as long as the pandemic is manageable, those are all theater movies for me. But it's funny because we talked about this and we've talked about it in a few episodes. The MCU has built trust in me to the point where I'm like, I will go see and I'll take a chance on something like Eternals. On the flip side of that, when you were just listing off the other stuff and you were like Black Adam, and I'm like,
nope.
You know, I like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm familiar with the character of Bob's Burgers movie.
That's Bob's Burgers coming out.
Sure.
But is that a theater movie? I don't think so.
That's the thing. I think, you know, they really have to think about how user habits have changed during this. I mean, look at Jaime's luxurious HBO Max, Paramount Plus subscriptions have, you know, dropped these movies day and date on his lap, you know. It's going to be hard to go back after that, right? I mean, you're going to really have to want to spend that time, effort, money, safety to make the effort to go back to the theater. You might be pretty choosy. You know, again, Matrix has me, Spider-Man has me, Ghostbusters probably has me. But, you know, then we get to the other side of Christmas. You know, I was thinking about this. The other movie that I really wanted to see was the new Edgar Wright. It's out right now. You and I could go see it tomorrow. However, I'm like, back to the theater again. Is it, you know, he makes really good looking movies and it looks really stylish. And I'm like, I kind of want to see it in the theater, but if I have to see it at home.
The problem with that is that like I've seen too much of it. I mean, there's been too much talk about it now. Like, you know, it's kind of like, you remember I never used to like to read the back of the video cases when we rented videos back in the day, right?
Yeah. I used to leave it to me.
Well, because I mean, like, you know, I can read too much into in a preview or whatever, and I've seen too much about the
Last Night in Soho. Yeah,
yeah. So that I'm thinking, like, it's Edgar Wright, and he does really good films, but you know, just have they spoiled it for me? You know.
Mm. Yeah, I'd still watch it. I like the actors in it. I like Matt Smith. I like Thomasin McKenzie. Yeah. I like you know, Anya Taylor-Joy. I would watch that. Irrespective of,
I mean, in the theater,
it just makes fun movies.
In the theater, would you watch it on TV? Right.
I'd like to see it in the theater, but I just don't know that I will make the time for it given the circumstances. It is also, it's not a blockbuster movie. It's probably playing in smaller theaters, and you know, there's complications that come with that too. So that it's a circumstantial thing.
Cool. Well, Ghostbusters. I think, are we all three in, or?
I'd say, especially after this trailer where we do see like it, there's some very overt references to the original film. And I think we'll see what the circumstances may change our paths, but I think I'm in.
And I'm thinking is it the girl with the glasses? Is she Egon's granddaughter?
Yes.
Or Finn?
Finn. I got the impression it was her, but
yeah. Maybe she's like a combination of Egon and what was the name of the girl that played the secretary?
Oh, Annie Potts. Yeah, I think Annie Potts is supposed to be her grandma. I think they may have tipped that.
That was the impression I got from one of the trailers.
She had the same glasses on, right?
Yep.
Cool. Alrighty.
All right.
Last up. Some sad news. Yes.
Yeah. Last up for our headlines, we had a passing this week. Dean Stockwell died this week at the age of 85. Dean Stockwell, you know, he had a very long and very diverse career. For our world, he's probably best known as Al on Quantum Leap. He played that character for 5 years. He was, you know, working alongside Scott Bakula. And it was the show, of course, where, you know, Sam is, you know, stuck traveling through time, trying to rectify these things that went wrong. Al is in the future, trying to sort of help him navigate his way through this. You know, funny role, you know, the sort of sort of cantankerous guy pushing buttons on the machine, trying to figure out, you know, what the reason why that Sam has leapt into this stuff. And he was very, you know, the chemistry between him and Bakula was really good on that show. And he was definitely a very enjoyable character. He's also really, you know, in our world, again, he's known for Dune. He was in the original David Lynch Dune movie. He was also, he worked with David Lynch on a couple of things. He worked on Blue Velvet famously.
Battlestar Galactica.
So he had one of the most iconic 1980s mustaches. If you get a chance, please look up Dean Stockwell's 1980s mustache. It is the most villainous looking mustache ever put on someone's face. He had this like big gap in the middle and these two little like pencil lines down the side. It looks like something out of an old movie. It was iconic. And yeah, he was around for a long time. He was an award nominated actor. He was, you know, around playing, he was a child actor. He was in all kinds of different things. And definitely going to be missed. He was definitely one of those faces you saw in movies. You knew that he was like, oh, he's in this. All right, cool. Well, this is going to be good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he was everywhere for a while there too, right?
Oh yeah, I mean he was one of those just in a ton of different things, starting, well, as they say, back in the 1950s, right? You know, and he was in different things, and then he, you know, migrated onto, you know, different TV appearances, lots of movies. He was just in everything. He was in an episode of The Twilight Zone way back when. I mean, this guy had a legendary career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he will be missed by us.
Yes. I'm just thinking about the little sort of iPhone thing that he had, which wasn't really an iPhone. It had buttons on it. But...
Well, and it made all those funny noises, right?
Yeah, and he would sort of see the future or see the next mission kind of thing.
Yeah, he would be like, well, it appears you're in this time. It appears you're... Sam, I hate to tell you, you're a man in a woman's body, and it's 1963, so it's going to be a tough time for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always a fun. They could always play with that plot line. Cool. All righty, we'll come back to those wacky devices in a bit, but remind me after we get through the next section. So we're at the main part of the show. This is the part where you're all tuned in for to see us talk about the Star Trek Prodigy. We're at season 1, episode 4, Dream Capture, and Jaime's going to regale us with some high moments and low moments.
Yeah, so I wrote down here verbatim the description on Paramount Plus, which says, "The crew has their first away mission on an undiscovered planet that manifests their deepest desires, only to realize the planet has desires of its own." I feel like that's fairly accurate. It feels way better. I don't know if you've ever read the Netflix descriptions for episodes.
No.
Like TNG and so they're like bonkers. They tell you nothing. You always have to go to Memory Alpha to figure out, wait, is this one I care about or is this some other one that I don't?
Yeah, and it's sort of it's an interesting trope because I think it's a Star Trek trope because it reminds me of Shore Leave, right? Like where Bones gets killed and gets brought back by Playboy bunnies and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, this I saw you had put that in there, Jaime. I immediately was like, that's the most Star Trek sentence I think I've ever seen. It was just, it's like the encapsulation of... It could be any number of Star Trek episodes.
Yeah. Sure. So we start right off here with the way that many Star Trek episodes start off, with the captain's log, this time done by Dal. Sounds like there's not much going on in their lives. So the hologram Janeway is teaching the crew the sort of Starfleet basics of how to, you know, navigate so they don't, you know, fly into deadly things, you know, sort of the on-the-job training sort of stuff as they're spending their time cruising the galaxy, trying to get away from the diviner. Gwyn is still in the brig when the proximity alert discovers an uncharted M-class planet in the... I wrote area, but I think this is the Hirogen system.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting as a callback to the Hirogen from Voyager, yeah, who were a nomadic race, a hunter race, so... kind of interesting to see if we encounter anything. I guess spoilers here. This is the first part of a two-parter.
Yep.
This ends on a cliffhanger. Apparently, according to Janeway, protocol calls for exploring strange new worlds. So she sort of browbeats the crew into heading there.
So she threatens them, right?
Yeah,
she,
despite Dal's insistence that they can't stop anywhere. They need to keep running as fast as they can from the diviner. So that was kind of interesting. And maybe gives us a hint at what hologram Janeway is capable of. You know, how close is she to something like the EMH, and is it going to be like early EMH versus later EMH for Voyager's run?
Yeah, I like the gag that she does there too, where she says, you know, it's an M-class planet, and Dal says, no, we're not going to any M-class planets, only A-class planets for my crew.
Yeah.
But it continues that whole theme. You mentioned the learning the basics, Jaime. Like, this is where we picked up last week, right? This is Star Trek 101. What's an M-class planet, kids? Oh, actually.
Yeah, it is one of those things where they, and we'll see this later with some of the equipment stuff, where you sort of have the basics being explained, not just to the characters, but to the presumably young audience as well.
Yeah, I said to Xavier earlier when we were talking about this show, I said, yeah, it may as well be called Starter Trek, because it really is the right beginning.
Yeah. So in between here, we have the USS Protostar landing on the planet. It seems to have kind of more of a ski to land instead of Voyager's quadruped style landing. So I guess they put all the budget on the fancy extra warp core and third nacelle, put no money into it. We have $20 left to make this thing land.
Or so, they were just preparing, like, what if, say, for example, Deanna Troi is going to land this thing and we need to like have a slide landing. Maybe we'll just put a ski on the front of this thing.
Yeah. Put a big old snowboard so it can land properly. Yeah.
It could have worked out better if we'd had that when, you know, she was like careening this thing through a mountainside. You know, you could put a ski on there. What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we said before, the crew and the younger audience watching this show is introduced to the concepts of tricorders, which in this design look like thick iPads, and type 1 phasers, which look like, you know, flip phones, and a little bit different of a design than we've seen before.
Aren't flip phones cool? Let's make them look like flip phones. The kids nowadays are nostalgic.
I'm thinking, so let's take a little segue here into out-of-universe concerns for the designs, right? Because this is a children's show. So I think the tricorders are intentionally made to look more like tablets, because it's something that a child would realistically have experience with. Even at an early age, and the phasers are probably intentionally made to look less like guns for many perhaps reasons.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good call, Jaime.
Yeah. I mean, that was always kind of true for the remote control and dustbuster designs for phasers in TNG. But I feel like they stand out as remarkably different from, let's say, the guns we saw in Picard or Discovery. Right.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep an eye on. Speaking of these phasers, Jenkum Pog promptly phasers himself. That was great. Yeah. And they get told about this rover called the Runaway, which has all sorts of nifty cool, you know, utilities as a land rover, including hold on to your butts grab handles.
My first comment was, how can you hold on to the grab handles if you're holding on to your butt?
You know, I have joked before with folks of like, look, if a hole opens up in an airplane, I am absolutely not getting sucked out. And they said, well, what do you mean? I was like, because my butt cheeks are going to be grabbing that seat so hard that there's just no way. They're like, you're not strong. I was like, my butt is. My hands may not be, but my butt can't. So this is what I assume is happening. But I don't know. I don't know this new design. We'll you know, put a pin in this one and hang on to this as future follow-up, I suppose. And
I did like the naming, though. I like the fact that it's the Runaway along with the Runabout, right?
I didn't catch that when I watched it live.
Yeah, and she only mentions that the phasers have stun setting. She doesn't mention the other setting.
That joke would have been less funny if Jenkum Pog had a hole in them.
Yeah. So by default, they're set to stun, maybe lightly annoy or something.
I just want to go back to the comment about going through the plane. I always thought that the making a hole in the plane and having all the content sucked out was a myth, like a Hollywood myth. I don't think that really happens.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, punching a hole like you're, you know, drinking some boba or something, but
yeah,
there's a difference between that and like a section of fuselage is a hole.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I could, that part I can see, like, you know, the one with the whole half the, you know, rows of seats go out as you know, planes collide or whatever. But mm-hmm. but I'm thinking of the James Bond Goldfinger death scene where Goldfinger gets sucked through the portal of the window because Bond shoots a.
Oh yeah, you know, puts a hole in the window. Yeah,
and Otto Preminger is a huge guy, right? Like to have him suck through a window of an airplane is kind of an impossibility, right? So
unless like he gets very mass very would, liquidy, yes.
Well, I was going to say his mass would have plucked up the hole, right? You know, anyway, back to the show.
Yeah. So this whole crew is supposed to come out here and explore the planet, except Janeway, who. You know, gets asked about it, and she's like, well, I'm a hologram. I have to stay on the ship. I, like, can't move anywhere. And Murph, the blob dog, as far as we... I mean, maybe he's sentient for all we know, but he hasn't really shown that yet. He seems more like a mascot than anything else at this time.
Yeah.
And I noted here in my notes that of the crew who's exploring, Jankum Pog, who did indeed phaser himself, is the only one with the common sense to wear an environmental suit. I thought was interesting. It becomes an interesting note later on, which I want to dive into when we get there, but he yep. was the one who was like, you know, I don't care if they tell me that it's okay to breathe, I'm going to wear this suit to protect me.
Yeah. But he can smell through it, which I found really strange.
Yeah, we'll dig into that when it gets to that scene, but I noted that in the notes as well. So again, this is a kid's show where people need to be a little bit more extreme versions. Dal is wildly reckless and drives away in the runaway, so he just doesn't know how to, you know, coordinate with a team. There's a claim from using their tricorders that there are no nutrients in the soil, but there are plants. So we'll probably talk a little bit about that too and what's going on, because it's still left kind of mysterious even in the cliffhanger part of this episode. But moving along, we have you know, Gwyn showing off that she's got some sort of telepathy thing to make her blade ooze out of its container that it's been locked in, and it frees her from the brig. And I'm like, is this something like programmable material? Is this a call out to Disco and its future jump stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it could be.
It's because she turns it from a sword into a shield at one point in the last episode, she's fighting with Rock. She turns it into a shield at one point, right? So it clearly it's like connected to her.
Maybe she's an Eternal. Ooh, spoilers. Oh, what?
Hang on.
Yeah, I figured like from the other things we'd seen, like, oh, okay, it can morph in some, you know, undisclosed way. But this one, it kind of like oozed out of the container. Like it went mm-hmm. through like a liquid oozing out of the little cracks in the container, which I thought was interesting and kind of neat. So she goes to hack Janeway, who doesn't have Face ID off, apparently. You can just kind of blink at her like the other holograms and be good. And she has apparently been taught from like day one by her father, the diviner, how to hack Starfleet technology. So he's been like clearly training her this whole time to find and take over the Protostar. And as, you know, a good child might, she contacts Dreadnought and tells him that she has control of the Protostar. And the crew kind of all at this point splits off into their own little fantasy areas, right? There's like the Harry Potter hedge maze. There's Jankum Pog saying how, like, you know, he smells this great stew, which made me think, wait a minute, how can he smell this gas from within his spacesuit? Does it have a rebreather tech? Did he put it on wrong? Yeah, what ideas do y'all have here?
Well, I guess the idea is that he's not necessarily bright enough to think about that, but it's probably affecting him telepathically, right?
No, I think, that's true, yeah. But I think that sounds plausible now. But I think I kind of got the impression that maybe you could smell things through the suit just because of the, you know, because you need to know what's in your environment kind of thing, right? But then again, why would you? What if you're really in a really nasty environment? Yeah, it's interesting. And then the next comment that Jaime has here, that I, as soon as he did that, I went, ooh, don't do that.
Yes, I guess this is a good teaching moment for the kiddos. Don't use your helmet as a bowl. It's not what it's for.
Well, because you have to live. I was thinking like in the next scene, he's walking around with like stew dripping onto his head, you know?
Yeah, I don't think Jankum's a long-term thinker. No. I get the impression he's more a live in the moment kind of dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. People who are better at catching this sort of thing than I was, because I did read a little bit on the internet, claim that he very briefly says that the stew reminds him of the kind of things they would make on the sleeper ship he was on. So people are saying, oh, maybe that's how he got to the Delta Quadrant. You know, he and maybe other Tellarites were on some sort of sleeper ship. You know, is it, I'm going to screw up this quote. It's like second star to the right and straight on until morning. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tinkerbell. Yep. Peter Pan
and Captain Kirk at the end of Undiscovered Country.
Mm-hmm.
So again, other crew members. So Rock Talk is encountering like space bunnies that don't show up on the sensors, or more weird stuff is going on. Zero in the hedge maze, I think the Harry Potter hedge maze, sees a Starfleet-esque engine down on the planet. Mm-hmm. Dal is seeing people who from behind who kind of look like himself. Maybe they're his parents. And that's where we end up encountering creepy Janeway, which is the like manifestation of the plant tendril thingies that are saying, like, we can see what you want and we can give it to you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His twitchy trigger finger does blast the plant Janeway, and Gwyn back on the ship is trying to take off with it, but the plants are having none of that, so they're entangling the ship and making it a huge pain. Dal at least has the sense to drive around to try to save folks who need to hold on to their butt grab handles. This does come up as a common phrase.
It's funny too, because you know, Dal so far has been much more self-serving in the first two-parter, and then in the third episode he's been very much like me first, everyone else last. And when he realizes, like, uh-oh, this is going south, the fact that he goes and gathers up his crewmates
is
a bit of a departure from character, interesting departure from character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One question I have before we carry on here is so the 8-year-old in me is telling Zero, like, just go up to get out of the maze. Like, she can fly, right? So just float yourself up, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
They, I think.
Right.
Zero does figure out that the plants want to show them their desires and take over. They swing by and pick up Jankum, who's apparently been eating a mud pie. That's what he's been doing this whole time.
But it tasted so real.
I don't know where this happens, but they skip. I skipped over Rock Talk, who was like getting dragged by the tendrils into like the earth, thinking that she was cuddling a whole bunch of space bunnies.
Yeah,
and I think they throw something at her face or something, right? To knock her out.
Yeah, they throw a rock at her head. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That wakes her up. Yeah,
yeah. And Gwyn sees her desires, which is her dad looking like a lot better shape than he seemed to have been when he came out of the like little jar, pickle jar thing that he was in.
The back to tank. Yeah.
Back to tank. Yes. Yes. And he's telling her all this stuff and she's like, all right, let's go. He's like, no, let's hang out here for a little bit. And she's like, whoa, wait a minute. For one, you're like too nice to be my father. And my father has been searching for this ship since day one that I've known him. Like, there's just no way he would hesitate. So she sniffs it out from that, right? The being a little too nice and not being anxious enough to claim his prize.
Yeah, I like that moment, because to me it said, you know, something that every kid probably thinks about their parents, like, no, this is suspicious, you're being too nice, what's wrong?
Exactly. So the gathered crew of folks is on the runaway. They're speeding towards the protostar, but ship is attempting to fly away. It's entangled. The Murph dog is crying like a puppy in the shuttlecraft as Gwyn's trying to find some way to escape. She does get out in the shuttlecraft with Murph, but both the ship and the shuttlecraft crash land, and the full United crew comes together and says, you stranded us all here. And we cut to close.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I mean, there's, so looking at this episode, there's quite a bit going on in the, you know, what is it, 20 to 22 minutes. And it feels like it's a good blend of just complicated enough to feel like Star Trek episodes, but simple enough, I think, for kids to follow along and get what's going on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. I still feel like, you know, I was out today with my son and we were talking about it. And I said, you know, yeah, it's Star Trek, definitely. There's a lot of explanation organically. Like, the writers are doing a good job. It's not slap you in the face, you know, plot details and you know, Star Trek world details. But they're doing a good job of sort of laying the foundation of, hey, if you watch this, kids, you'll be able to understand better when your dad makes you sit down and watch Voyager or TNG or whatever. It's true. Like, I really, it is Star Trek 101 mixed with, you know, again, funny moments mixed with fun characters. It really does feel, it's funny, we talked about it being very much in line with Clone Wars, but yeah, I think I do think it's skewing a little younger because it definitely is a little more, you know, it's a little more spoon-fed. I think obviously that will wean over time. It logically it will. They won't need to continue going back and spoon feeding you this stuff, but yeah, it works. You know, again, this is not Trek for us. This is Trek for a younger audience. It, you know, I think all Trek fans will continue to watch all Trek, but yeah, I think it definitely is much more catered to a younger audience, and I think it's serving it well.
And I was thinking too, when they defined the M classification, I recall seeing something like that in an early, you know, the original series show that sort of had a 60s charm to it, where they would kind of explain science or their version of science to the audience through, you know, somebody saying, well, it's called an M class planet because, you know, we can breathe and it's very Earth-like kind of idea. Right. I mean, I don't remember the exact statement, but that was kind of how they would define it. And then, you know, as they, if you've done any research on the original series, you'll find that, you know, they bounced around different ideas. They had different kind of holsters for the phasers. They had different kind of phasers too. They even had a little handheld one that looked like a communicator as well, right? Less like a gun, because the original ones were a gun, but then they had these different styles that they tried. I mean, and they did the same sort of thing in that show, is what I'm saying, is that while they would have these, you know, conundrums that Kirk and the gang would go through, and then in the storytelling that someone would say, oh, we're in the OK Corral, or, oh, hey, can't you see he's black on the one on the left and I'm black on the right kind of deal, right? Like, they would very clearly explain to the 60s audience what was going on, in the same sense that they're doing here with targeting the young kids, right? But again, too, it's interesting to see what they don't say. Like, for instance, she doesn't tell them that there's a kill setting on the phaser. She just says there's a stun setting, and that's the default, right? So they're generally, notwithstanding them getting stunned isn't a pleasant experience, but notwithstanding, you're not killing people by pointing the gun at them or pointing the phaser at them and pulling the trigger.
Well, mm-hmm. was it Star Trek VI where the two people who help kill the Chancellor are killed mm-hmm. themselves by a stun blast at close range?
Something like that.
Because you can't activate a kill, because if you activate a kill, it sets off the alarms inside. Yeah, so they were killed by a stun blast at close range. No, what Chen Kung Pao just did.
Yeah, he kind of like, yeah, he had pointed it at himself. Like, yeah, less than 3 feet away for sure, yeah.
I'm telling you, the show could have taken an interesting twist to be like, and that's how Chen Kung Pao died, kids, don't play with guns.
But even in that show, I've forgotten the name of the character, but Canada's own...
Kim Cattrall, yeah.
Kim Cattrall, she explains sabotage in the same way, right?
Oh, Sabo, yes.
Sabotage, what the actual definition of that is, which, again, most people don't even, I mean, I didn't know until I saw the movie, to be mm-hmm. honest with you, about the wooden shoes. That's the same sort of thing. Like, they do that in movies and they do that, you know, all the time. We don't really notice it. But, you know, when you come to like the Next Generation, you may not notice it as much as you do here, but, you know, yeah. A friend of mine used to talk about those grab handles, hold on to your butt handles, but she called them something completely different that I can't say.
Yeah, holy something handles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that every car has, you know, if you look, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, she played Valeris. That was the, because...
Valeris, thank you.
I was thinking about that. I don't know why, but when I was out doing yard work the other day, I was just kind of the fact that they had to remake that character, because it was supposed to be Savick, yeah. Right?
Yes.
It was originally supposed to be Savick, and it was supposed to be a continuation of the Savick character from Star Trek 2 and 3, that she came back aboard the ship, and she's the one that sort of betrays Kirk. And I was thinking, God, that would have been so much better.
Yeah.
Would have made so much more bookend sense for her to be the one who's like, I lost David, and I've seen the Klingons like this, and therefore that's why I'm betraying you. With Valeris, it has like no gravitas. I don't know why. Again, it was just sitting in my brain when I was out shoveling the other day doing some yard work, and I was like, damn, that would have made a so much better coda for Star Trek VI if it could have been Savick.
Well, whenever you have a Vulcan, like, you know, when you think about pure Vulcans, right, whenever you have them in a plot twist like this, you know, because, you know, we're pure Trekkers, we don't expect that, you know, we don't expect Spock to be behind reunification, you know, but I think we do, right, like, generally, and or, like, even the Robin Lynn dude that Tom Hardy plays, you know.
He's Reman, right?
Yeah. So, but even that sort of, like, you know, we don't know much about the Remans, which was why they were able to, you know,
yeah, they could fudge some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's sort of playing off the whole Romulus and Remus Roman mythology. Right. But, it's interesting the way they kind of twist these things around. And, but like this whole idea of explaining stuff. I mean, we get that in adult movies too. We just don't really notice that we're being told, spoon fed in that same sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, plot exposition has to go somewhere, right?
Yes, exactly.
I pasted into our show notes the Memory Alpha piece on the class, the planet class system, and it's pretty interesting. It's a good little rabbit hole. Maybe we'll put that in our show notes. But the idea of what a class M planet is, what the M stands for, what some of the other letters mean. It's a nice little digression if you're interested. I think, again, for the purposes of Star Trek, you know, being taught to perhaps a younger audience, saying a class M planet is a planet you can breathe on is perfect. But it's a fun little rabbit hole to go down to.
Yeah. Oh, like I was going to say, it also would have to have water, right? And it says here that Vulcan does not have an abundance of water, so it's not deemed... Oh, but it is deemed an M-class planet.
Yeah, it's habitable, but not necessarily abundant in liquid water. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, good episode. Definitely looking forward to seeing how they resolve this. It did feel very, very Trek. It was, you know, again, the whole, like, a planet that knows your desires and is going to cater to your whim, but it has a sinister, you know, agenda. That's a very Star Trek-y kind of thing, which, again... Even immersing that type of trope into a younger audience makes sense. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of story that you're going to get if you start watching Star Trek, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait till they do the, like, Naked Now episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Only in this one, because it's aimed at teens and tweens, or tweens and kids, it's going to be heavy petting or what?
Yeah. Now look at that. Dean Stockel was in Anchors Away.
There you go.
Yeah, Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra.
As a young kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Oh, he's also in Beverly Hills Cop 2 with that mustache.
Yep. Oh, I remember that scene. He's the patsy. He gets set up by the bad guy.
Cool. So are we going to talk about the Eternals now?
Let's see if we can get through it without hurting Jaime's feelings.
Yeah, well, I don't know. my first comment, if I can, at the end of the movie, leaned over to Jonathan and said, was it just me or was that plot really convoluted?
Yeah, I mean, so let me try to take a stab at this.
Well, and so I did follow that up with, like, the thing is that Thor and Iron Man and, you know, Batman and Superman and Spider-Man, they're well-established characters, right? Whereas... we were coming at this like Golden Compass, or like if you hadn't read the books, you know, there was no frame of reference, right?
It's true. This is a bit of a departure from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it's the second new property that they've launched in this new phase after Shang-Chi. But Shang-Chi was pretty grounded. You know, he's a dude. and, you know, he's interacting, he has a very normal life, and then it gets kind of out of control, which again is a very sort of tried and true storytelling method, you know, the hero's journey kind of thing. This one, the idea right from the beginning, and obviously, as just Tim mentioned, he missed just a smidge at the beginning. The idea, very, very broadly, and I think you can get it just from watching the trailer, is that these Eternals have come to Earth to fight these bad guys, and they live a long time, and they have to fight the bad guys. And it's a challenging one because there is no connection between this movie and anything you've seen in the MCU before. They name drop the snapping and the Thanos stuff, but there really is no connection between this and anything you've seen before. So you could come into this movie theoretically cold and just jump in. Now, the other thing that makes it really challenging, unlike Shang-Chi, is it's not just introducing to a character, it's introducing to a group of characters. The Eternals are not a person, they're a group of people. And it's awfully hard to do that all at once. It would be like starting with the Avengers and then trying to explain to you, oh, and Thor does this. Oh, and this is what Captain America can do. And oh, this is also what Black Widow is. And, you know, I understand why you do it this way, but it can be challenging to be accessible when you're coming at it and you're trying to introduce a whole bunch of characters, different abilities, different relationships with each other, and tell a story that spans a long period of time. You know, the idea is they've come a long time ago and they've been on Earth for a long time and they're sort of flashing back and forth. You're right, Tim. Long story short, it's a complicated story. And it's actually quite a long movie at that. So again, keeping things high level, it's a lot to ask from an audience, particularly one where, you know, we aren't really in the Marvel movie groove right now. You know, when they slipped in a few of the weird ones, like Guardians, like Ant-Man, we were kind of already, you know, off and rolling. Here, you know, we had a big, we had Endgame, we had Spider-Man, Far From Home, and then we went silent because of the pandemic for quite a while. This year we've gotten Black Widow, which again is very much tied to the older portion of the MCU because it's a flashback movie. And then we just got Shang-Chi. Mm-hmm. And Shang-Chi, as I said, is a pretty accessible, broadly accessible movie. This one is a bit of an ask, and I think that's why audiences are struggling with it. That's why you're seeing the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, and because it's trying to pack in a lot of stuff. It is laying some foundations for some stuff. It's introducing some lots and lots of new characters, new ideas. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask. And so I can see why it's having a tough time getting people to connect with it. That being said, there are some really good performances in there. There's some really interesting ideas in there. There are some very, you know, likable characters who we hope we see more from. You know, am I clamoring for an Eternals 2? Not necessarily. But if the Eternals are part of the larger MCU and in you know, parts come back and we see some more of these characters, I'm supportive of that.
Yeah. They did cover why they didn't get involved in Endgame, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's interesting, but
we weren't in the budget.
I think the best comp, I was thinking about this a lot today, the best comp that I can come up with, again, try to sort of keep things from getting too clear, is it felt a little bit like Avengers Age of Ultron. It does have a beginning, a middle, and end. You can watch it on its own. It has a story, but it really feels like a piece of connective tissue. And I think when you watch it as a standalone movie now, when we're kind of easing back into this new phase of the Marvel Universe, it kind of sticks out a little bit as a what's happened? Like, I don't understand. A lot of head scratchy. Well, who is that? Well, what does that mean? What am I supposed to take away from that? And I think that can be a little disorienting for an audience that isn't sort of in full speed ahead on the MCU. But I think when you view it on Disney Plus 3 years from now as a part of the MCU in its, you know, as part of this phase, I think it's going to fit in nicely. I remember thinking in the moment, Age of Ultron, I was like, that wasn't, you know, the first Avengers was really good. this feels like there are kind of too many characters, it's overstuffed and all those same concerns. But now I've gone back and watched it and I'm like, oh, because you know where everything is going, you're like, oh, this makes much more sense. It's a lot more clear. You know, the character arcs make more sense. It is still, it's still a connective movie, but I think it holds up much better than it did when it first came out. I think that's how we'll look back on Eternals, is that right now it can be a bit of a challenge to ask audiences to buy in on this. Although, again, if you go in with an open mind of, you know, I'm just going to get introduced to a whole bunch of new stuff and enjoy some performances and things go pew, 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 it's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with the movie at all. It just has a lot of stuff it's trying to sort of set up and sort of get things going on. And you got to kind of be able to roll with that and just know that Kevin Feige and Marvel have a plan and this is part of the plan. And, you know, climb on board because they're not going backwards and they know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, there were some characters in there I did like. I mean, like, there's a couple that I just thought, like, the actor portraying them, does he do any kind of other acting? Because it was very sort of, you know, without giving it away, there's some of the actors are like, one of the characters could have been just about anybody else. And in fact, when I came in late and I saw this person moving around in the fight scene, I thought, is that the guy from, Doctor Strange in this movie all of a sudden, you know, like, or the same actor or something like that, but turned out it wasn't. Also, I was going to talk about this a bit, but we just saw Kevin Smith talking after the movie, the documentary Clerk, which is about his life and his career. He was talking about in the question and answer section at the end about whether he would do a Marvel movie, and he said, you know, that Marvel movies are very much a machine. Like, it's pre-visualized already. The director walks in and they hand them, this is what it's going to look like. And so for someone like, he talked about why Edgar Wright walked away from Ant-Man and why he wouldn't entertain doing I'm sure he would entertain if they gave him showed him the paycheck, but he wouldn't do one because he said that they're very formulaic. And I've heard too that Marvel movies, you know, they're always three acts, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And, you know, you know, in the middle part, you can, if you need to take a bathroom break or get some popcorn, you can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Which I actually considered, but, you know, there's always that sort of, you know, lull in the middle. And then, you know, and the other thing too is, like, I think that too, like you said, the mid-credit and the post-credit scenes mm-hmm. are both introduce other people that, you know, will also bring back in the same sense of why is Tom Holland playing, you know, the main character Nathan Drake in Uncharted is because he has a following and an audience and there's some mileage that they'll get out of the two people that are going to portray those characters that they reveal in the post credit. And, you know, for the years as they built up the MCU in the Hollywood version, you know, Sam Jackson would always appear at the end of the movie and introduce a new person or tell them about the Avengers or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, connective tissue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of make that connection. And that's kind of sort of what you expect. It's funny. Like when you said to me, like, oh wait, there's a scene coming up. And I went, oh yeah, right. I forgot. This is a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I do feel after listening to what Kevin Smith said the other day about the fact that the director doesn't have a lot of pull and a lot of say in this, I kind of feel sorry for Chloe Zhang, having made this movie, because, you know, she's coming off an Oscar win. Mm-hmm. You wonder, I mean, and there is a tie-in between the way Shang-Chi looked and this movie looked too, right? Like from a design point of view, like they were very similar kind of creatures and very similar kind of like outfits at the...
It's a polite way of saying, damn, there was a lot of CGI in this movie.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of CGI in the movie, but there was also that sort of ray tracing thing, like the sword in that Gwyn has, you know, in mm-hmm. in Prodigy. It's very, very reminiscent of the sort of the Doctor Strange, you know, you sort of twist your hand and you
know, create a magic
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Magic shield and whatever. Yeah, or, yeah. No, yeah. It's true.
Or you block a blow by incanting this you know mm-hmm. wireframe around your wrist or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Or yeah, in the one case where they make handcuffs and somebody gets out of them. But you know, the like that from that point of view, like it's interesting to see that, to know that, you know, this is a formula, and also this is a stepping stone to something else, right? Because they did say the Eternals will be back, you know, like,
yeah, they, you know, didn't, okay, say in what circumstance, but yes,
yeah, yep, true. And you know, my reaction to that comment when I saw that on the screen was like, oh, okay. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and there was definitely some standout performances. You know, I was talking about it with my son today when we were out, and you know, I thought Gemma Chan really helped. Like, she's a movie star. She carried the movie really well. Yeah. She plays
Circe. She was the main character in Humans, right?
She was, And she was really quite strong. I hadn't watched Humans, so I wasn't as familiar with her, but she's a very captivating performer. I thought, you know, for their parts, I thought Kumail Nanjiani was quite good. I thought, you know, the Brian Tyree Henry, who played Fastos.
He's the grumpy guy?
He was the one who leaves his husband and his son to go and join the fight.
Oh, yeah, different guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's the engineer of the team. Mm-hmm. I love him from Atlanta. He's really, 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 really good on the show Atlanta. And so I was really excited to see him in here, and he was really good. He was really, really enjoyable. Even Leah McHugh, the young woman who plays Sprite, you know, she couldn't have been 14, 15 when she made this. And, you know, I thought she was quite good, but there was a few there where you're like, man, there's a lot of characters. Like they really do, you know, it's just like, oh, and there's that, there's, oh, this person, and their names are not ones that ring immediately to mind. You know, the Eternals, even, you know, somebody like, I mean, I don't think, I mean, you guys tell me, the Eternals are not, they're not mainstream for somebody like me in comics. And I know a lot about comic books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eternals, if I had said to you before, have you heard of the comic book Eternals? You might've been like, sure. Jaime, I assume yes.
the name I think I was familiar with, but if you asked me to name a roster, I would not have
Name one character. Even now, you haven't seen the movie. Can you name one person who's a member of the Eternals?
No. I mean, I think maybe they chose actors I know for a reason, like Salma Hayek. Hayek is one of the characters, right?
Yes, Salma Hayek, she's an Eternal. I mean, legitimately, she looks incredible, you know, and she's well into her, you know, 50s or 60s. Well,
they did talk about the fact that this is an interesting movie because there were older women roles, like, because Angelina Jolie and Salma Hayek both had key roles in this movie.
And Salma Hayek, 55 years old, and she is still both breathtaking and extremely talented. Angelina Jolie, 46, same.
Yeah, and they weren't playing somebody's mother or grandmother or whatever, right?
No, again, I think there's a lot of there. I don't want people to come away from this with the impression that we were like, oh, crap. Like, it's not. It is. You just have to go in with an open mind and take what they give you for what they give you and accept that it is part of a larger narrative. And that's what the MCU is going to be now. It's almost nothing you watch when you watch an MCU movie or watch an MCU TV show now is ever going to be self-contained. It's really ever going to have its, you know, is going to be just what it is. It's all about universe building. And this is more so that. Some of the stories are going to be less so that. This one is very much, you know, strap in, kids. We're going for a long-term ride. Yeah, so
for sure.
Now that we've talked about this, how much more or less do you want to see this after our, hopefully pretty spoiler free review there, Jaime? How do we do?
Yeah, I mean, I'll still end up watching it probably, you know, close to day one on Disney Plus. But again, it was already not one that I was clamoring to see in the theaters. And I think kind of especially not now. Right. But I was having a conversation with my dad. We were talking about the movies coming out. He's like, Eternals. Well, I don't know about it. I was like, Dad, like, you got to see it. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, because you're going to be missing something if you don't see this movie. Like, normal people can skip this movie. People who are trying to follow the entire story cannot skip this movie. So they kind of know they got you there, right?
Yeah, and that, I think, is the real thing of it is that in the world we live in, like, Jaime, I don't know, have you been spoiled at all on the post-credit scenes?
I have not.
Yeah, they really do feel like it's just a matter of time. Like, even, you know, we went and saw it, you know, theoretically 5 or 6 days after it came out. I will be surprised, and maybe you can keep us surprised on our weekly shows here. I'll be surprised if you're able to completely avoid the after credits stuff, spoiler stuff, between now and when it comes out in Disney Plus. So theoretically, we're looking at what, like a 2 month window. It's probably not coming to Disney Plus till, if I had to guess, end of January, probably somewhere in there.
Sounds about right, because you don't want to waste it in December, which is a little soon. So January, closer to February, is probably your earliest time. And they're going to be thinking about, I don't know when Disney's fiscal year is. I think it's the same as the calendar year. So they kind of want a good set of numbers for Q1. So yeah, I think.
Yeah. Or again, they could target it around something like Martin Luther King Day or something where people are going to have an extra bit of time or something, you know, but anyways, realistically, it's not coming out probably in 2021. It's coming out in early 2022 at some point. The post-credit scenes, again, completely spoiler-free, definitely do build on the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe as well. So it's going to be pretty hard to contain that across the blogosphere, across Reddit, across social, across, you know, fan blogs and even, you know, mainstream sources. I think they're going to give people a little bit of leeway, but I've already seen, I've seen headlines that are like, who is ... What is ... mean? And it's just like, hey, they, like, this is not very nice.
Yeah. So that's a good warning. Cause I'm starting to get the feeling this is leaning into that, Baby Yoda kind of thing, where long before I'd ever seen The Mandalorian, I knew about the child thing, because the internet could not avoid spoilers on that, and it sounds like that will be the same case here.
Yeah. No, it'll be tricky, but again, even if we were to tell you straight out what it is right now, it still wouldn't take away from it, and it's certainly not like, you know, crystal clear all the meanings and the what does it mean and where is it going and blah. I just took a quick look at Rotten Tomatoes to see where we're at. So right now on the Tomatometer, it is 47% from critical consensus. So that is the lowest ranked Marvel movie of all time. But it's got an 80% audience score. So the audiences are still enjoying what they're putting out there, even if the critics aren't. So I don't know if that's critical expectation based on the fact, again, like you say, Tim, like Chloe Zhao is coming off an Oscar win. She's a terrific filmmaker, you know, but it's still apparently working for the audience. Yeah. The critical consensus on Rotten Tomatoes says an ambitious superhero epic that soars as often as it strains, Eternals takes the MCU in intriguing and occasionally confounding new directions. The audience says it's a different kind of Marvel movie, but Eternals still contains all the action, humor, and heart the fans are looking for. I kind of agree with both of those things. You know, yeah, it, in some places it's reaching and it's not necessarily hitting. And in some places it's, you know, hitting you exactly where you expect to be hit and hitting you well. So I would say, like all things Marvel, you're going to want to see it. Everybody's going to want to see it if you're keeping up with the MCU. Do you have to see it right now? Do you have to, you know, if you feel like you're in a situation where you don't necessarily feel comfortable in the theater? Yeah, of course you can wait until, you know, January or whenever it's coming out on Disney Plus. Of course, you know, it's not going to destroy you to see it. And while I do think, you know, Marvel movies are really cool on a big screen, it's not going to break your brain. Again, I thought Black Widow was perfectly fine on my television screen. You know, would it have looked great on an IMAX screen? Of course it would have, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
All right, let's move on to our watch list, shall we? I know, I'll go first. I started watching Invasion on Apple TV, and I thought, oh, here we go, another, you know, War of the Worlds, another, you know, apocalypse kind of thing happening or whatever. But yeah, it is really good. What's interesting about it is the character development stories that go along with this whole sort of mysterious what's happening to the world kind of thing. I'm five episodes in. It started in October, so I was able to binge the first five episodes. I watched one thinking, oh, well, I'll watch one and see how I feel. And then at the end of it, I thought, okay, well, I'll watch another one to see how I feel about that. And by the time I got to the third, fourth, and fifth, I'm like, okay, where's the sixth episode, you know? and then, so, I mean, yeah, so Jaime, the answer is wait till they're all out. But the what's interesting is
you know, there's like one woman whose husband is having an affair and she's kind of finding it out. She's got two little kids and they're together trying to get away from whatever this badness is. But at the same time, she's sort of finding out about this relationship he's having with another woman, as she's sort of, you know, finding out that, you know, her whole world is, you know, she's given up her career to become a housewife for this guy. And this is how he's repaying her, kind of thing. And then you're wait a minute, this is like an invasion movie, right? So you fall into these traps where the storytelling is so interesting about this particular group of people. There's a kid, there's a bunch of kids on, there's a young goofy kid, and you know, they're on a school trip and in the bus, and something happens to the bus during this whole, you know, thing, all these different connected experiences that are, there's a thread going through that hasn't really been tied up yet, but you know, and the kids are there, there's a bus accident, and then they're on their own, and they have to figure out how to survive in this situation. You know, they're all like, you know, 10, 11, 12 year old kids, right? And you get tied up into that story and you forget that, oh, wait a minute, there's this apocalypse is happening at the same time, sort of. So they suck you into these little stories, you know, and it's interesting in that, you know, I think we talked about Why the Last Man. There was a couple of episodes where it was just about this one group of women. Well, and the whole movie's about, the whole show's about this one group of women, but the one with Mimi, I've forgotten her name, the Amazon woman, who's leading, she's like taken over as a leader in this group. Have you guys watched, what you've watched?
Missy Pyle, you mean Missy Pyle?
Missy Pyle, yeah.
Missy Pyle, yeah.
So she plays a really dynamic character, but you know, there's one episode where it's just about that group, right? And you're kind of like, well, what about the other people? But in this one, they kind of break it down. Like, I think there's 4 or 5 different plots going on at the same time with this thread through the middle. But each one of the stories is compelling enough that you want to know what's going on. And they give you enough of one group of people and then move to the other one. But like I said, the hypnotizing part is like, you're watching this thing and you're like, oh yeah, wait a minute, there's this pandemic thingy going on. We have to sort of like, what's going on with that? They don't tell you, like, you know, it's sort of how telling you the story from other people's perspectives. Kind of like my favorite scene in Shaun of the Dead is when Shaun, he, you know, gets up in the morning and he's like all exhausted. And he goes to the store and gets his paper and, you know, and a cornetto, and he goes back to his apartment, right, his flat. And the next day, the apocalypse has happened. All the zombies have taken over England. And yet he gets up in the morning, he goes over to the corner store, buys his paper, gets a cornetto, and then, you know, and goes back and completely oblivious to the fact that the whole world has been taken over by zombies, right?
Yep.
Which is like, I think that's just a brilliant film, brilliant storytelling. And that's kind of sort of where this one is, too, is like, you know, this stuff is happening to these people and they're kind of like, okay, just going through the motions, kind of thing. Right. So very compelling show. I definitely highly, highly recommend watching Invasion, in spite of the fact that it's another, you know, pandemic apocalypse kind of story. You know, it's really interesting TV.
Yeah. Cool.
That's me.
Yeah. I'll have to add an entry there to get that, you know, we collect all the series of streaming services. That one will come back around in the rotation, Apple TV Plus.
Cool.
For one that is like having electricity, Netflix, which people probably have, I'd recommend Lock and Key Season 2.
Mm.
If you haven't seen the first one about the family with the mysterious heritage and the mysterious house that they go into, that's part of their heritage, and magical keys. I think I'm reaching back as to how I described season one. I think it was like the darker parts of Harry Potter, like probably, you know, Goblet of Fire kind of level, you know, where there's whimsy, but then there's like some dark stuff in there. Season two feels like later Potter, where it's definitely a lot darker, a little less whimsy, and a little bit more serious. So keep that in mind if you were watching stuff. This one continues more or less where the season one ended off. It's maybe a few weeks or a few months later or something. So it's definitely a continuing story. I thought it was good. I will caveat to say that there are folks who said that it's a little too action oriented compared to the first season, which is probably fair. But if you go back to the Harry Potter analogy, it's a little bit more actiony in the later Harry Potters than it is the early ones. So use that as your guidance.
And we highly support watching this one, given that we have a family member who works on that show.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I enjoyed the season. It's a pretty easy watch. 10 episodes.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll say stick around for the credits, just to shout out our family member. We make sure he gets his due.
Cool. And then my second item here is to watch Shang-Chi for free on Disney Plus, scare quotes, free on Disney Plus, starting Friday, November 12th. So I'll get a chance to see it this weekend.
Cool. Then we can really get into mixing it up and talking about spoilers next week.
Yeah, exactly.
It is Disney Plus Day. That's a good note. We'll also see they're dropping. So it's the second anniversary of Disney Plus is the 12th of November. And so they're doing this Disney Plus Day. So not only are they dropping that, but they're dropping Jungle Cruise. They're dropping the new Home Alone product. They're dropping a whole bunch of other products that day. And I don't know if they're gonna have any more announcements or anything, but I guess we'll report back next week and see if anything comes out of that. A couple things I've got. So Red Notice is coming to Netflix this weekend. Red Notice is it's a heist movie. It stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It stars Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds. So some pretty hefty star power. I mean, this is as big a cast as you get in any blockbuster movie release in the theater. And you get it on your Netflix subscription. I'm a sucker for a heist movie. I love heist movies, especially if heaven forbid they actually have some twists in there that I don't see coming. So I think I'm interested in this one. The trailer looks very charming. Again, all three of those actors have a real charisma and charm. They're all very likable. They're all very witty and charming. I think I'm looking forward to seeing if that chemistry meshes in the way that it possibly could, because if it does, it'll be terrific. If it doesn't, we'll talk about that. So yeah, that's on Netflix on the 12th. And I also noticed as I was looking through something earlier that Last Night in Soho, which we talked about, the new Edgar Wright movie, is actually going to be available next week on demand platforms.
Nice.
Yep. So if, for example, you couldn't get out to the theater to see the new Edgar Wright movie, then you'll be able to watch it in the comfort of your own home starting on November 19th on, I assume, all of your favorite streaming platforms. Nice. And I don't think if you listen to any of these episodes, if you're a listener of the show, you know that Tim and I are pretty diehard Edgar supporters. So.
Mm-hmm. I have dinner with Kevin Smith. Anytime either one of them is in town, I'll go off and see them.
Yeah, and I'm usually a sucker for seeing their movies, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So my pick for this week is Star Trek Discovery. I think you're going to want to tune in for this one, kids.
Yeah, and maybe we should do a podcast about it.
So next week we're going to get the conclusion of this Star Trek Prodigy, and we're also going to get the season 4 premiere of Star Trek Discovery all in one day.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, hi, May. If people want to get in touch with you, where do they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
And Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you?
You can always find me on Instagram and Twitter as @JPKNews.
And as I've said over 600 and something times, my name is Timitra, TimMitra, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spockcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spockcast website at spockcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spockcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpockcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spockcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spockcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
that too.
Did you guys see the new trailer for Lost in Space? They dropped the final trailer for that as well this week. Yeah, a little more of a robust trailer with a little more, you know, what the big thing is as they set. I guess it's December 1st. It's coming to Netflix. It's funny because the little boy who they had playing Will Robinson, he's looking very much like a young man now. It's funny.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as are the, you know, the two young women that were sort of teen, early, you know, young women, they definitely look a little more adult.
Right.
It's funny.
Cool.
Yeah. The other movie that's on my to-do radar that I asked my wife if she wanted to go see it because we don't go see movies a lot together. There's only a few filmmakers that we will make an effort to go see. One of them is Wes Anderson. And The French Dispatch is out in theaters now. It's been out for a couple of weeks, the latest Wes Anderson film. And I sort of said, do you want to go, you know, go see it in the theater? And she said, yeah, I feel like we can watch that at home. And it's true. Again, like his movies are really quite beautiful. I don't know if you are, I know, Tim, I think you and I have seen a few of those, but he makes really interesting visually films. His OCD makes for really, really interesting visual films because he has this, like, he likes to really fill the screen. He has a palette. He really likes symmetry. He makes really interesting looking films. They announced this week that one's coming out on digital on December 14th and coming out on Blu-ray on the 28th. So not too far of a wait for that one if you couldn't get out to the theater for that one too. I'm keen. I want to see that one. That and he's got such a reputation now. He works with such great actors. Like it's just packed again. He's got, you know, Bill Murray and Frances McDormand and Jeffrey Wright and Adrian Brody and Tilda Swinton and Owen Wilson and Timothy Chalamet and Lea Seydoux and, you know, Liev Schreiber and Betty Moss and, you know, like Edward Norton, Willem Dafoe, Saoirse Ronan, like Christoph Waltz. Like it's insane. It's insane how many people want to work with this guy. Like it's the Avengers Endgame of auteur cinema. Yeah, it's, you know, like he really does. He gets like these, like, you know, crazy long lists of these people. And again, some of them are only in the movie for like 5 minutes, but you're like, geez, how the hell did you get Frances McDormand to be in your movie for 10 minutes? That's insane. Like she's, you know, arguably the second greatest actor, you know, female actor of all time behind Meryl Streep. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Jaime, did you catch up with Doctor Who?
I've not. What is it? Two episodes now?
Yeah, second episode came out. I fell asleep watching the second episode. I still have to watch the second half of it, but
did we watch that one already?
Yeah, it came out on Sunday.
Yes, I must have watched. Yes, that's right, because Rogers messed it up again.
Of course they did.
Complaining about that.
Thank you, Rogers.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what happens in it. Oh, yeah, the army's back again, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Centaurans.
Mm. Jonathan Majors on SNL this weekend.
Yeah.
Along with Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I knew that would have you, Tim. You'd be like, Taylor Swift, what?
Yeah, I know, eh? For sure.
So we do the after show. We're going to do the what Tim really thinks about the Eternals.
No, I think you summed it up well. I think, you know, I have to give it time. Let it age.
Yeah, I mean it's tricky. It's, you know, it is. It's an absolutely tricky movie. It's by no means is it perfect, and it doesn't fit into that nice sort of square box, which I mean you can make the case that's what Marvel movies do, right? They fit into this perfect little, you know, the formula works so well. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having Jaime on board so we can have an unfiltered view of this one. Hopefully, Jaime, you'll be able to get out for, you know, we should try and coordinate our watchings of those last few, the Ghostbusters, the Matrix, and the Spider-Man, so we can mix those into our conversations around all the Trek that's coming up. Jaime, I'm curious, so we're now a good ways into the NHL season. Your beloved Seattle Kraken are playing tonight. They're playing their, let's see, 14th game. Has the bloom come off the rose, or is Seattle still Kraken crazy, or is it are people like, oh yeah, that's right, hockey's 82 games and it lasts a long time?
Yeah, I think some of the enthusiasm is not quite as there as it was. Thinking back to 2009 when the Sounders debuted, it probably helped that the Sounders were pretty good right out of the gate, whereas the Kraken are 4-8-1.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Kraken have shut somebody out yet. So I do know that in hockey, you quite literally have to score more than your opponent. But they yes. sort of take that to the extreme of like, they literally cannot win unless they outscore the opponent. There is no, yes. oh, we won, you know, 1-0 or something. Like, it'd be nice to see a goose egg in there and see some defense. Yeah.
Well, and I will say, I like the way that they built their team. They went and signed the best free agent goaltender on the market in Philip Grubauer. So, I mean, you have to think that'll come in time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they continue to push. I mean, hockey is pretty flat this year. There's, you know, there are some like teams that are rising above, but there's a lot of, you know, competitive games every night. And I've been sort of just keeping an eye on it, you know. They're not getting their doors kicked in. They're competing really well. It's just, you know, can't win them all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It makes you realize what an aberration the Vegas Knights are. Like, they just got like extremely, either they were extremely smart or extremely lucky or a little of both to be that hot, that good out of the start and still haven't taken a step back.
Indeed. Indeed.
Just seeing an article online, Disney Plus has confirmed it has delayed the release of Ms. Marvel until late next year.
Ms. Marvel?
Ms. Marvel, yeah.
Or Ms.?
Ms. Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be... I thought they were going to put that out in advance of the Marvels movie, but yeah, I don't know. See, Cintra's even upset. What? Ms. Marvel? What? Yep. I'm... never upset to have a day off, especially during a very busy stretch, which we've had at work, but also having a day off on a Thursday and having to go back on a Friday seems painful.
It's weird for sure.
Yeah, it is weird.
I mean, yeah. I mean, to be fair, you guys obviously are pretty used to it. That's how U.S. Thanksgiving is, right? That's, you always get the Thursday, but then most people get the Friday off too, right?
Yeah, it's pretty common for folks to take that day off. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have to take it? Like, do you have to request it, or do your companies don't give you that day, do they?
It depends. Some companies just do the day after. Some have it. Well, we kind of expect people to take PTO, and then some are like, we're not asking any questions if you don't show up. Like, it just really varies culturally. It is, you know, unless you're working retail or something. Pretty culturally, it's pretty much a 4-day weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we'd like to thank you in the spirit of Thanksgiving, because for some reason we do have Black Friday on the same day you guys have Black Friday, even though
how's that coming up, right?
Even though Thursday means nothing here.
Yeah.
So we go from nothing Thursday to Black Friday.
Yeah, it's
well, here it became a thing because, especially here in Southern Ontario, we're so close to the U.S. border. And I know this is true in places like Vancouver as well, where the proximity is so close that so many Canadians were like, cool, Black Friday sales are on. Let's cross the border, go down to the States and take advantage of all these incredible deals. And so that was, you know, people were going down there and loading up for their Christmas shopping, just like they are in America. And I think a lot of Canadian retailers were like, hey, so now... Mm-hmm. Black Friday, pre-Black Friday, pre-Black Friday sales are just as much present here as they are down there. I can't even remember from last year, but I imagine Black Friday has got to be a lot bigger of an online day than it is in a retail space than it used to be, right? I guess they're not having people like, you know, fight for television sets and cough all over each other down there now.
Yeah, a lot of it has turned into online and more than a day. You know, it's feels like it's a week prior that deals start coming out on various sites. And then when it comes to the in-person stuff, they've done better about having, you know, security there and organizing it in a, all right, are you first in line? Great. You three people get the tickets for the, you know, insane 75-inch TV for $1 kind of deals,
yeah,
instead of,
yeah,
you know, whoever gets there first, you know, pushing over pregnant women and grandmas kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you watch the South Park? South Park did an episode or a multi-part episode about Black Friday, where, you know, they almost did it like Game of Thrones. It was very, very, very apt, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a chaotic environment. I know for a while there, because I was working in media when that was really starting to become more and more prevalent. And, you know, we would send a reporter down to Buffalo and be like, here's your flak jacket, go down and cover, you know, the insanity. And, you know, we get all these great, you know, social media posts about, you know, just saw this person push somebody over for this thing. And like, you know, okay, great, good stuff.
Yeah, so what Black Friday deals do we have coming up, I wonder?
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of, I get notifications from Amazon already saying, you know, pre-Black Friday sales have begun, and I got notifications from a few different things that I'm on the mailing list for that are popping up, and certainly on my social media feeds, that's what a lot of the ads are popping up in there now, are being targeted towards me and my shopping habits. They're like, oh, we see you like collected edition comic books. Guess what? We've got a sale over here.
Yeah. Come on down.
Yep.
Oh, look, Black Friday pricing on TVs already.
There you go. Do you need a new TV?
No.
Well, there you go. I know. Xavier does that to me all the time. Did you see Black Friday TV sales are on? I'm like, we don't need a TV. He's like, don't we? I'm like, yeah, okay, listen.
Don't we? We need more vacuum cleaners. We've got to have some more vacuum cleaners.
Yeah. I got to have more cowbell.
Well, we have four Roombas now.
I just can't help but think this is how the robot wars get started.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, do you see the little Stay Puff guys riding a Roomba in the trailer for Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim, you should get a couple stencils and spray paint an Autobot and Decepticon logo, respectively, on your dueling Roombas.
That or just like really go to town and turn them into those robot wars machines where like one of them's got a cleaver, the other one's got like a, you know, set of steak knives strapped to it, and just let them have at it. There can be only one.
I can get a refurbished M1 mini for $589. Hmm. Huh. Because Carol's finally moved the computer up to the middle bedroom. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so I put her on Sherry's old mini, but she's complaining about it's really slow. I'm like, well, if you like this way of working, because she's using the TV that she's got up there, right? Mm. It's like $100 off for an M1 8-core. How much memory has got this? Probably like nothing, right?
Wow, now I just feel like a drug dealer that I pushed him in this.
256.
Hmm? I said, now I feel like a drug dealer that I just put you onto the Black Friday sales. No, there's lots of good deals. Get in there.
Yeah. It's got all the ports I need on here. Doesn't have the display port. It's what I was using. Right, well, I guess we'll call it a day.
Yep.
An hour.
Got to get geared up. I got another podcast to work on tomorrow morning.
Oh, lucky you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you know how I feel.
I was going to say, not quite in Tim category yet, but definitely in there. It's just, yeah. We're ramping up. We're up to, this is what, seven? This is episode 7 of this season for the healthcare pod, and so 8 recordings on Monday, and then 9 and 10 are in a couple of weeks.
How quickly do they turn them around?
Including all the AODA and all the other stuff that we have to do, the accessibility requirements and all that other stuff that we have to do. I can, if I have to, I can turn an episode around in about 5 days, but usually we try and plan ahead. So like I'm recording with our host tomorrow and our guests, and that episode is coming out on December 7th. Hmm. So we actually managed to get ahead of things a little bit this season in a way that last season we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants because we had some really tight deadlines. So we were like, you know, yeah, really, really having to turn things around fast. Now we were able to buy ourselves a little bit of time. So we've already recorded and like we just published 2 new episodes this week. And then we've already got the other 2 episodes recorded and locked down for November 23rd already. And then because we're going up bi-weekly, it's a lot easier to manage.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, yeah, I mean, it continues to be challenging just because, you know, it's when you're producing a podcast for a organization like ours, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through.
Yeah.
Approvals. Imagine. And, you know, like we have to pre-screen, we have to, you know, send all our questions up, be vetted by a lot of people. And yeah, it's a lot of rigmarole. It's people sort of say, well, do you do this kind of stuff with your podcast? I'm like, no, we were very much more fly by the seat of our pants.
This one?
Yeah.
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 I know. There's a whole problem. I mean, the whole idea behind podcasts was literally the iPod. Like, you just record some people talking and put it on an iPod, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not like rocket science from that point of view. But yeah, when you're talking about a business and like, you know, yeah, like a bunch of my friends who are running their own businesses have all started doing podcasts. So of course they get the nice little email from me going, geez, everybody's got a podcast now.
Yeah.
And I've been warning Jaime and Mark that's coming. It's going to be the point where, you know, you'll get like your Netflix account, your podcast, you know, your cell phone.
Yeah. You know,
your TikTok.
Yeah. I like it as a tool. Again, my area of work right now is obviously communications, and as mm-hmm. a tool in the toolbox, you know, alongside so many other tactics you can use for communications. I really like the podcast because it allows you to, particularly for our organization, which is a data organization, mm-hmm. it allows you to just sort of contextualize stuff in a way that you can't always do, you know, when you're looking at raw data. You can actually bring somebody in from outside and say, hey, here's, mm-hmm. you know, here's what we're seeing. What are you seeing on the ground as a patient, as a healthcare person, as a doctor, as somebody who's working in administration, as somebody who's working at a facility, as somebody who's working in government. So we can mm-hmm. kind of go places that are really different and unusual for us. So it's kind of fun to be able to sort of mm-hmm. add that stuff to the mix.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, like it's something that, you know, I've been, it's easy enough to do. And I you know, I think that most businesses that want to get promoting their services or whatever should do it, like look into it. Right. So I'm not surprised that people are doing more and more people doing podcasts, but
yeah,
you know, yeah.
Yeah. I'm working on it. I've been trying to wrangle this together the last little while, but, there are a few organizations like ours across the country that are, sort of, you know, arm's length government agencies that have podcasts. And so I pitched to a few of them like, hey, maybe we should, you know, work on a little cooperative crossover where we can, you know, yeah. we're not going to get advertising from HelloFresh and, you know, skip the dishes and stuff like that, but we can promote each other. So yeah. I suggest that, you know, if we can get our stuff going, we should probably try and, you know, do a couple of little overlaps and promote each other's stuff. And that seems to be coming together. So hopefully we'll do that soon.
Well, all the radio stations have done that too. Like that's, yeah. It's not a, you know, like CBC's all, everything CBC produces now is available as a podcast, yep. and, you know, which is
yeah,
great.
Yeah, Alan Cross and like yeah. all kinds of stuff like that, right?
Yeah. 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 And he's got like tons of content, right?
Because he does, yeah. And they actually right? they started monetizing it. I just noticed that in the last episode I listened to, that now they're releasing episodes sooner for premium members who are paying a fee.
Oh,
and they're dropping
scam,
the commercials
yeah.
out, and they're doing this yeah. stuff. I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Talk to you next week, guys.
Okay, bye.
Talk to you later. Yeah.